The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning, everyone. And I don't have any particular thing on my mind to give a talk about today. So perhaps it's an occasion, if you have any questions you'd like to ask or something else you'd like to bring up for discussion, I'd be happy to try to respond to that. Yes.
I'd like to ask about emotions and moods. What I know about them is emotions arise in the body. They go fairly quickly, and sometimes you hang on to them, and sometimes they disappear. Moods, I don't understand, except they hang around a long time.
Uh-huh.
And is there a connection between the two? Are they completely different?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have a good answer. The there is a distinction between... One distinction is made is that... you can have a whole series of different kind of emotional responses and reactions within a larger mood, which is more constant. So you can be in a good mood, and someone could cut you off in traffic, and you get irritated for a moment, but the good mood is still there, more dominant. You can be sad or angry, and suddenly see something beautiful and wonderful, and for a moment feel some delight, but it doesn't really shift your mood at all. So there's momentary mental factors, momentary mental activities that are emotions. And as you said, emotions in and of themselves, what researchers these days have pointed out is emotions in and of themselves are very brief. They don't last very long. The reason why emotions last is because we keep refueling them. We keep recreating them, and we're involved with them. Moods might be something that we're creating, but it's much more subtle. It might involve much deeper operating system in the mind than an emotion. So, for example, someone might be afraid momentarily. It's an emotion of fear comes through, and it just comes through and it's gone. Or a person might feel insecure, but the person's mood that persists maybe for a lifetime even is a background atmosphere of insecurity, of worry. And the fear of the moment that arose and passed, maybe it's because the mountain lion walked into the room and then walked out. So it makes sense to be afraid, and the mountain lion's gone, and the fear dissipates pretty quickly, maybe. But the insecurity might have to do with some really deep conditioning or lesson the person learned earlier in life. And that lesson, that conditioning, that way of thinking, operates at a much more subtle level than, oh no, it's a mountain lion. It has to do with our sense of self, what our understanding about what life is about. It might have to do with some deeper held emotion that's there. And so this deeper layer is sometimes harder to get to and see, and it tends to be something that can be much more stuck for a longer period of time. That's one thing that I know. So that's what occurs to me as an answer. Is that helpful? Why is it helpful?
It's helpful, first of all, because it confirms what I'm thinking or what I feel, that there's a difference. And it confirms, in a sense, what I think I know about emotions. It isn't very clear about moods. But it helps in the sense that I feel it's worthwhile, then I'm not going on the wrong track to explore it some more.
Uh-huh. You know, it's interesting, this is not directly connected to your question, but in Buddhism sometimes they'll make a distinction between two kinds of emotions. One is afflictive emotions, and the other is maybe called beneficial emotions or wholesome emotions, skillful emotions. And the afflictive emotions are those that are afflictive, they hurt. And so it'd be things like, you know, anger, even if justified, kind of hurts to be angry. Fear kind of hurts to be afraid. Self-criticism hurts. Greed, if that's an emotion, you know, it hurts to have the contraction around it. And afflictive emotions tend to be reactive, tend to arise out of some kind of clinging and holding onto something, or resisting something, something we call clinging-based. Then there's a whole other class of emotions, or feelings, or moods, or whatever you want to call it, that are not in reaction or in relationship to anything out there. Afflictive emotions tend to be in relationship to something that we want or don't want or something. But it's possible to feel joy, be happy, independent of what's happening around you, independent of reacting and relating to things. So, it's possible to feel love independent of someone that you love. And so one of the things that can happen in meditation is that the afflictive emotions, the reactive emotions of the mind can settle away and relax and soften. And the mental system still has a capacity for joy, for happiness, for love, a variety of positive feelings. But they don't arise because of a conventional reason. They arise because of the inner ecology has shifted and allows that to kind of come forth or to be there. So someone who is fairly mature in the Buddhist path will probably experience a lot more joy as they go about their life than someone who is immature. Because they're not creating the joy. They're not thinking about to be joyful. They're not trying to be joyful. It's just there. It's a kind of pervasive feeling of well-being that's there. Please.
So I just want to share an observation that, as I think about it, seems obvious, but felt important through practice this morning. And it was an inverse relationship between tension and trust. And I had, so thank you for the invitation to focus on tension. And I had something occur for me that doesn't occur very often during my practice. And it was a memory or memories of situations as a young person where there was a lack of safety in the environment or a lack of trust in the environment. And I have carried a fair amount of tension or anxiety tension in my day-to-day life through my development. And practice has really helped over the years in helping to recognize that and reduce the experience of it. And I just wanted to share that observation that I had today more clearly than I think I had experienced before. The inverse relationship between the two. So
the more trust you have, the less tension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, it seems obvious, but as I think about it, but to have that really, I don't know, clearly experienced.
Oh yeah.
Through practice this morning was powerful. So I just wanted to share that.
I think it's wonderful to hear that. And a couple of things I'd like to say in response in relationship to that. One is that another word that's been in my mind related to trust is safety. So trust is a little bit more internal. You feel trusting. Safety is a little bit more maybe externally focused. You feel safe. But they're closely connected. And it's very hard to relax and open up deeply unless we feel safe. And deep trust and confidence is one of the things that helps us feel safe. But sometimes the conditions around us need to be created so that we feel safe and can open up to something. That's one thing. And the other is it's really great if the trust can be such that you trust opening up to your tension. So it doesn't have to be either or, but the two can actually, you know, the trust can actually support the practice of, you know, you feel safe to feel the difficulties inside. So I saw another hand behind you, wasn't it?
So when I meditate, I don't usually do focus on my breath. There's sometimes I spend an entire 45 minutes try to relax myself. Sometimes I just observe myself. So it's a mixture of different types of meditation. Is that okay, or I have to focus on one and be good at it?
It's all okay. There's no external standard that you're supposed to measure yourself against and, you know, and be this kind of person, you know, and this kind of meditation. I think the standard is it useful for you? And what is most useful? So if it's useful for you to just focus on your attention, if it's useful to observe yourself, and then it's a wonderful thing. You're lucky to have found that that benefits your life. If it's useful to stay with your breath, then do that for a while. Now, if you do one way of practicing for a while, and you have some question like you're asking now, I think the best thing to do is not ask a teacher for a categorical answer, this is what you should do, but rather experiment. So listening to your question, I would encourage you, experiment for a while with your breathing, focusing about doing breath meditation, and see if that's beneficial and helpful for you. And I'll say this is what I've learned sometimes for me, is that sometimes I've had certain kind of tension, or I've had certain kind of preoccupation, my mind is stuck on something or some feeling, and so I'll bring my mindfulness to it and try to be mindful of it carefully and be present for it and do all those things. And then I'll stop paying attention to it and just be with my breathing. And sometimes by just simply being my breathing and not focusing on it, it dissolves quicker than if I'm focusing on it. There's a way in which focus, any kind of focus on our issues, any kind of focus on our tension or whatever's going on, can very, very subtly reinforce it and keep it going. And sometimes it's helpful just to put it aside and just focus on your breath as a neutral place. And then as you're with your breathing, maybe the way we fuel it by focusing on it, by paying attention to it, abates, and the whole thing can dissolve by itself. Sometimes. So sometimes I've noticed that a faster way to relax my body in meditation is just to really focus on my breath, rather than focusing on attention. And sometimes I find it useful to focus on attention, like I said earlier today. And so, you know, it's all, you know, it varies. It's not a one way. And part of becoming a wise meditator is learning a number of different ways and learning which way is good at any given time, experimenting. So, great. Thank you for these questions. So, it's time to stop. So, we're going to